So it's a trip. You know, there were these two drunks. They were standing at the window of a bar, and they were looking in, and boy, they needed a drink bad, but they were broke. And they're just standing there, got this, you know, just looking. And this third drunk comes up, and he says, "Hey, I'll show y'all how to get a drink." So he walks in and sits down at the bar, calls the bartender over, and he orders a drink. The bartender sits it in front of him. He drinks the drink, gets up, starts to walk out, and the bartender says, "Hey, did you pay for that drink?" He said, "I sure did. Don't you remember?" And he walked out. And he said, "See there, guys, that's how you get a drink." So the second one walked in and sat down, ordered a drink, drank it, started to walk out. And the guy, the bartender, said, "Hey, did you pay for that drink?" He said, "I sure did." And he walked out. So the third guy goes in, sits down, orders a drink. And the bartender sets a drink in front of him and takes off his apron, walks around, sits down by him. He says, "You know," he said, "two guys come in here before you. They each ordered a drink, drank it, started to walk out. I said, y'all hadn't paid for that drink." And they said, "They did." And he said, "And I'm sure they didn't." This drunk said, "Listen, man," he said, "I've got enough problems of my own." He said, "Would you just give me my change so I can go?" I remember one time I was not quite 21 yet, but I was hoping I could pass for it. So me and a buddy walked into a liquor store and picked out a whole bunch of bottles and walked up and said, I didn't have the ID. I wasn't 21 yet. So we set all the bottles on the bar, you know, and sure enough, the girl said, "Can I see your ID?" And I said, "Well, I don't have it with me." And she said, "Well, I can't sell it to you." And so we put it all back and we went down the road to the next liquor store and got all our bottles and went and set them on the bar. And dead gummit, the lady said, "Can I see your ID?" And I said, "Oh man, I don't have it with me." She said, "Sorry, can't sell it." So I went to the next bar and set all the bottles on the bar, you know, and the girl said, "Let me see your ID." And I said, "I don't need an ID." And she said, "Oh, okay." I think maybe she thought maybe blind people don't have to have one. You know, people are so afraid they're going to insult you that, you know, sometimes they'll just say, "Oh, okay." But, you know, the big book says that the drinking career of every alcoholic has been marked by escapades. Funny, humiliating, shameful, and tragic. It doesn't end funny, does it? It sure doesn't. And by the time most of us get here, I hear these people say, "Don't talk about God in here. You might scare somebody out." I don't know about y'all. I imagine most of us coming in here, if we don't believe in God, we're hoping there's one. So let's give them some hope. Amen. Y'all did the moment of silence? Yeah, we did that. Okay, moving on. I'm Blind Dave, by the way, alcoholic drug addict. And my sobriety date is July the 9th of 1998. It's the day after my anniversary. I tell people, I say, I got tired of waking up the day after and saying, "Did we have a good time last night?" And when she'd say, "I did, I don't know where you were," I thought, "I better stay sober." No. But I was reading in Bill's story the other day, you know, and it says this. Chapter 1, Bill's story. He says, "After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. They did not need to tell me. I knew and almost welcomed the idea. It was a devastating blow to my pride, I who had thought so well of myself, of my abilities, of my capacity to surmount obstacles, was cornered at last. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining that endless procession of sots that had gone on before me. I thought of my poor wife. There had been much happiness after all. What would I not give to make amends? But that was over now. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overcome. Alcohol was my master. Trembling, I stepped from the hospital a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink, and on Armistice Day, 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I'd have to be shut up somewhere, or I would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last drunk. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Whoa, what a turnaround. What a turnaround. I was soon to be catapulted. I like it that we read these promises, and every now and then somebody will read, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And I always say, that's up to you. The book promises soon, catapulted, rocketed. And I've never seen a very slow-moving rocket. These guys have to go through a lot of training and endurance just to stand the G's. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call a fourth dimension of existence that grows incredibly more wonderful as time passes. There's no ceiling to a spiritual experience. It grows incredibly more wonderful as time passes. By the way, there's really no bottom to spiritual sickness either. But this thing about as time passes, incredibly more wonderful. You know, I was doing my morning meditations. I was 5 years sober. And boy, it had been a rocket ride. And I was trying to practice this guided meditation thing that some of y'all probably heard about, where you develop your inner ear to the voice of intuition, you know, and you learn to do that in this program at Step 11. And so I was practicing that. And one of my favorite promises when I first got in the program was the one that says, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Oh, that was good news. You know, we tell them, keep coming back, it'll get better. And boy, when I read, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead, that was good news. And at 5 years sober, though, it had been a wonderful ride. And I'm sitting one morning in my morning meditation, I'm listening for God, and I'm ready to write down, you know, my guided meditations. And what I heard that morning was, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Yeah, well, I was a little puzzled. I thought, now that was a great promise when I was a beginner. But I've got 5 years sober now, and it has been wonderful. Why is God telling me that this morning? And I thought, I wonder if that still applies. And I kind of asked, does that still apply? And what I heard next was, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead, and that will always be true. I spent the rest of the day meditating on that. I mean, you mean to tell me that as good as it's been, the best is yet to come? And no matter how good it gets, the best is still yet to come? And as long as I stay on the AA beam, it don't matter. The best is yet to come. Can that really be true? That's been my experience so far, and I've decided just to go for it. I believe it. I believe it is. You know, I've got a buddy, and he's really having a great time in recovery himself. We've got some good recovery in Austin, people. We really do. And he had gone up to Washington State, a little bitty town out there somewhere, visiting some folks, and he went off to an AA meeting. It was a little hick town meeting. And so, sure enough, as a lot of AA meetings do, they said, let's hear from our visitor. Would you like to share today? And so he did. He shared. He talked about recovery and how wonderful it was. And, oh, God, he was talking about the God in the program. And he went on. And when he got through, one of the old-timers in the group said, well, now that we're all back from zippity-doo-dah land, he said, I need to let you newcomers know that this program is hard. Yeah, let's just go ahead and stomp out their hope. Why don't we? Yeah. Zippity-doo-dah land. Did you know the big book says many of us feel we need look no further for utopia? Did you know it says we have found much of heaven? That we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, and that the best is yet to come, and that will always be true? Sounds pretty zippity-doo-dah to me. The big book says we are like a gaunt prospector belt drawn in over the last ounce of food when our pitch struck gold. Joy at our release from a life of frustration knew no bounds. No bounds to our joy. We feel we've struck something better than gold. Did you know that this big book has within its pages something better than gold? Something better than a gold mine. It will release you from a life of worry and stress and frustration. That's better than gold. I heard a guy say one time, he said, when I first started coming to AA, he said that the thing that I really liked was that the program and the steps were all suggested. He said that was comfortable for me. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, I found that pretty comfortable too when I first came in. You know, that it was just suggested that you get a sponsor, and it was just suggested, you know. And so that's comfortable for people. But you know, after I've been in the program a while, what I really take comfort in are the absolutes. The absolutes. Big book tells me that the tremendous fact, that's what we're talking about now, the absolutes, the facts, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which has revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. Revolutionized. The central fact of our lives today is just this and nothing less. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences. The central fact is just this and nothing less. That our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. This book is zippity-doo all the way through it, isn't it? You know, I was sitting in, I'm remembering sitting in a meeting one time. Somebody said, yes, anybody in here 30 days? You know, and this guy said, yeah, I've got 7 days or something like this or whatever. He was new. And the first guy that spoke said, and he had 15 years sobriety, he said, glad you're here. He said, I want to tell you, we can't guarantee you it's going to get any better. He said, I'll tell you what though, if you keep drinking, we can guarantee you it's going to get worse. I could barely contain myself. I didn't know whether to get mad or cry to hear somebody tell the new guy, we can't guarantee you it's going to get any better. We can only guarantee you that if you work this program, you might can keep it from getting any worse. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Just tell Him that. Keep your other opinion to yourself. You know, I read that word miraculous, and the first time I read that, I almost zipped by it. You know, it's one of them words that your mind bounces off of because you don't take it serious. Oh, they're just poetically speaking, right? Metaphorically speaking or something. Do they mean the miraculous literally? Or did they just speak in figuratively? We'll go back and read the sentence. It says, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator's in our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. They meant miraculous to the point that they used four adjectives to guarantee it. In one sentence, this is indeed an absolute certain fact. That this book's going to connect you with an experience to where the miraculous becomes a normal way of life. Our Creator's in into our hearts and lives. Lives. That's right. This program is all-encompassing. You give your life to it, it impacts your entire life. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a power greater than ourselves. You know, suppose Bill Gates, now I don't know that he is or that he ain't, but suppose Bill Gates, we found out he was an alcoholic and he stumbles in here to one of our meetings one day and so I'm fixing to sponsor him and I've got to sit down and say, okay, Bill, step one, can you admit that you're powerless over life, your life is unmanageable? Whoa. Any of y'all think you could help Bill Gates to see that his life is unmanageable? I think I could. You know, we're either we're driven by fear that we're not going to get what we want or we're not going to be able to keep what we have. And all of us out here with fears that we ain't going to get what he's got. He's got fears he ain't going to get to keep it. And I don't know that one's any less miserable than the other. If he does not have a spiritual way of life, he goes to bed at night hoping the stock market don't take a downturn and then one night him lose millions. He's got fears we can't fathom. In fact, his great pile of money might be a testimony to his fear that he's trying to wall himself up against. But I don't know that that's true or not. Maybe he does have a spiritual life. But I'll guarantee you, I wouldn't want his misery if he didn't. Unmanageable. He's got problems that comes with all that. That I hope he's got a spiritual way of life. You know, chapter 1 and chapter 3, both Bill said, my friend promised that when these steps were taken, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator and would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. It's not just about getting sober, is it? Sure not. And Fred said the same thing in chapter 3. He said, quite as important was the discovery that these spiritual principles would solve all my problems. The same tools. You can apply them to any problem. I sat in a meeting one time. This girl said, you know, we don't have all the answers. We don't have all the answers. I said, hey, hold on here. There's one answer that fits them all. We don't have all the questions, but I've got the answer. Throw your question out here. We'll stomp it with the answer. That's absolutely right. You know, I quote a lot of people, don't I? but I like to do that. I mean, I hear somebody say something good, I write it down. I want to use it. This fellow said one time, he said, there is something that if you don't have it, nothing else matters. He said, and if you do have it, nothing else matters. I like that. I wrote it down. Absolutely. Absolutely. There is something. If you don't have it, nothing else matters. If you do have it, nothing else matters. And that's what we're talking about here. That's something. And how do we find that in this program? For me, it started on page 28 of the Big Book, where it says in there that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms. as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. So you see, there are terms to having a relationship with God. Terms and conditions. I found those terms when I got to page 63. Step 3. When I'm ready to turn my will and life over the care of God. It says, made a decision. Turn our will and life over the care of God. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? First of all, we had to quit playing God. Didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, we're going to let God be the director. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Wow. He provided what I needed. Someone said to me one time, they said, Dave, you don't understand, Dave. He said, I've got issues outside the scope of this program. And I said, well, let's read this again. He is all powerful. Anything out of His reach? And He would provide whatever I needed. Anything left out? If, and I said, now sit up and pay attention here, because all that you need being provided by an all-powerful being who can make sure you get it is guaranteed to you on one stipulation. If. And now you better, if that's true, this word if becomes the most important word in all the big book. If I keep close to Him and perform His work well. It's like God says, okay, here's the rules of the game. We're going to have a relationship and we're going to do this together. Now here's the rules. I do this if you do this. In fact, in essence, He says, I will do this when you do this. That's the rules of the game. And God says, now here's the ball. I'm going to sit over here on the sideline. You've got to bring the ball in play. You've got to put the ball in play, and you have to do it by the rules of the game. If you put the ball into play by the rules of the game, I will get into the game with you. From there on, it's just me learning how to pass the ball to God. He shoots the basket. It's a wonderful experience. So that's the rules of the game. And when I learned that, if I would keep close to Him and perform His work well, I tell people this when I get through doing that third step, I get them off the floor, I say, Dad, do you understand? Do you really understand that God has left you nothing to worry about except how to keep close to Him and perform His work well? And if you're going to lay in bed at night, can't sleep because you're worried about something, it better be how to keep close to Him and perform His work well. If you'll do that, He'll do the rest. Now, that's what the rest of the steps are about, is to teach me how to do that, that terms of step 3. And when I learn how to do that, by the way, there is a learning curve, but you're on full payroll when you sign up. That's the wonderful thing about God. You're on full payroll, even though there's on-the-job training. And it says, joy at our release from a life of frustration. Oh, God, always in collision with something or somebody, even when I was trying to be good. Joyous release from the life of frustration knew no bounds. Oh, yeah, I still do my massage therapy. I still collect the money. We still write checks and mail off the bills, go to the grocery store, buy groceries, come home, cook it up, sit down at a table and eat it. But what I don't do today is go to bed tonight and worry about how that's going to happen tomorrow. Been a long time since I've had to do that. I just sit down, give thanks and eat. It comes. Joyous release from a life of worry and stress. Knew no bounds. We feel we've struck something better than gold. The big book says that it is of infinite value. infinite value. That's a big word. It goes right up there along with miraculous, doesn't it? But you know, if I do not know the terms and conditions by which me and God do this thing, if I don't know the terms and conditions of my relationship with God, by which He has promised to absolutely provide all that I will need, then life is going to talk me out of it. Oh, it'll scare you out of it. You know, if I stood in front of you and I said, listen, Patrick, behind me in one hand I've got the M&M's plain chocolate candies. In the other hand I got a 44 Magnum. Which hand do you choose? You know, and you'd go, this one? And I'd go, are you sure? And you'd go, this one? I'd go, are you sure? You can see, and life will talk you out of it if you don't know. And then before long you'll be saying, maybe I should have took that other job. Maybe I should have married that other girl. Maybe I should have, maybe I need a drink. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. If we had a new employer, that implies something, doesn't it? Being all powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. That translates into our primary purpose, to stay sober, help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. That's what I'm supposed to worry about. And if I catch myself worrying about something else, it's because I haven't been worrying enough about this. You know, they say an idle mind is the devil's workshop. Same kind of idea. If I'm worrying about this stuff over here, it's because I forgot to worry about this. And I tell them, if you worry about this, you won't have to worry about anything else. The big book says, established on such a footing. Notice that. There's only one footing in this program, and it's the terms and conditions of your relationship with God. Established on this footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves. More and more we become interested in seeing what we can contribute. Yeah, because I finally snap that when I get on the giving end of you, I get on the receiving end of God. Established on this footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. So I can quit managing my life. More and more we become interested in seeing what we can contribute. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear. Today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. Great. It don't get any better. Joy of our release from a life of worry and stress knew no bounds. So we proceed on through step four. To keep close to Him and perform His work well. Steps 4 through 9 is how I initially get close to God. Now step 10 and 11 is how I keep close to Him, and 12 is how I perform His work well. So the rest of the steps are to teach you how to live in your step 3. A relationship with God. So in step 4 we begin to learn what's the chief block, resentment. And then we look at resentments and analyze resentments, and we come to the conclusion that there's fear underneath all those resentments, isn't there? Sure is. So we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper. La 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 la. And then perhaps, I like this, we're going to review our phobias. Yes, let's lay down here on the psychiatrist's couch now. And tell me about your childhood. Let's review and analyze all your fears. And I like the way the big book just suddenly cuts in and says, perhaps there's a better way. We think so. We are now on a different basis. And I always ask my sponsors when I get to this part of step 4, I say, when did you get on a different basis? They go, I say, how about back there at step 3? When you turned your will and life over to the care of God on clearly defined terms, and you understand this is God's part, this is your part. Notice how little your part is? Notice how big God's part is? You got on a new basis for living life. Remember that? Back at step 3? He is all powerful? Yeah. I say, okay, we're on a new basis. We trust infinite God. Doesn't that sound like all-powerful? Sounds like we're talking about the same God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigned. And I always say, so when were you given an assignment? They go, back at step three. That's right. When God said, I will do this if you will do this. That became your assignment. That became your assignment. And it says, just to the extent that we do, as we think He would have us, that's that assignment, my primary purpose, He will enable us to match calamity with serenity. Whoa. You mean if I've got 100 pounds of fear coming in on me, when I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help, I mean when I lean into that fear and turn my thoughts outward to someone I can help, it flips over and becomes 100 pounds of faith. If it's 1,000 pounds of fear coming in on me, once I turn my thoughts outward to someone I can help, I flip it into 1,000 pounds of faith. That's why it matches calamity with serenity. It's a wonderful program. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. I like that word, laugh. You know, you get over to chapter 11 of the big book, and it talks about a husband and wife. They came to their first meeting. It says they succumbed to that gay crowd inside who laughed at their own misfortunes and understood his. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be going into meetings today where people come in and said, I need to talk about this. I lost my job! But you know, no, today people say, I really need to share. I'm just, you know. No, they succumbed to the gay crowd inside who laughed at their own misfortunes. Did you know there's only one way to laugh in the face of trouble? There's only one way that that's possible. To laugh in the face of trouble. And that's to absolutely know the terms and conditions by which you pass the ball off to God. The harder I hit this, the harder He hits this. Guaranteed. That's why the big book says, when trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate His omnipotence. Cheerfully. Capitalize it. Flip it over. You know how to do it. Get you in phone books. Blue ones for the guys, pink ones for the girls. Calling people. I've been there. I've been in the face of trouble and I'm making phone calls and saying, how are you today? Because I needed help. Absolutely. You know, the big book says that we cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate omnipotence. Did you know that there are terms and conditions by which I can engage? This is the point of engagement where I engage the power of God. It don't matter how powerful of an engine you got in your car. If you want that power to hit the back wheels of that car, you got to let the clutch out. And them gears have to engage. And the point at which I engage God is at the terms of our relationship. To keep close to Him and perform His work well. And at that point, I can cheerfully capitalize the situation and watch omnipotent power flow into the situation. The 12 and 12 says, in AA we saw men and women spared from alcohol's final catastrophe. Not only so, we saw them meet and transcend their other pains and trials. Transcend. What does that mean? To rise above. Their other pains and trials. We saw them calmly accept impossible situations, seeking neither to run nor to recriminate. This was a faith that worked under all conditions. Impossible situations. You know, it said, when trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate His omnipotence. That's a big word, omnipotence. But impossible is another pretty big word. They're both absolutes. Omnipotent says, I am undefeatable. And impossible says, it's like, impossible says, you can't get past me. And omnipotent says, you can't stop me. So in this corner, we got in the black trunks. We've got impossible. And in this corner, in the white trunks, we've got omnipotent. Ding. You want to put any money on this fight? Who do you think's going to win? Omnipotent. Every time. First round. KO. Every time. But I thought he was impossible to stop. Impossible, that's a human experience. Omnipotent is a divine experience. Impossible doesn't even exist on the divine plane. And what this program does is it takes my humanity, me, down here on this plane, and opens a door to the divine and floods that into my life. Floods that into my life. To demonstrate his omnipotence, I must act upon the terms of my relationship with my Creator. This initiates the activity of God in my life. I like that, initiates. It's like the ignition switch. We've got to know how to reach for and turn the ignition switch. Fire that mother up. To keep close to Him and perform His work well. And like I said, steps 4 through 9 are for me to initially clean house and get close to God to remove the blocks. Step 10 and 11 are how I keep close to Him. And 12 is how I perform His work well. So let's get on to the end of this thing. You know, I've been sitting on my 4-step now for 6 months. Why? There's a rainbow, a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow. Let's get to it. In fact, it's better than gold. It's of infinite value. So we continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. And so, step 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Why do I want to do that? Well, because I've got a deal going with God out here, and I'm supposed to be helping other alcoholics and addicts is my part of the deal. And the reason I want to improve my conscious contact, the reason God released me from a life of worry and stress and frustration and trying to manage and orchestrate my life, He freed me from being so preoccupied with that so that now I can go help alcoholics and addicts. That's the reason He freed me. And so I better be at my job. You know, this guided meditation experience has grown with me, and I get inspired thoughts from God by the bushel basket full. And I want you to know that very seldom do I ever hear God say, Dave, today would be a nice time to buy a new car. I hear God say, call so-and-so today. Say this to them. I'll be reading the big book. He'll say, that's what so-and-so needs to hear. Call your sponsor today. I get all kinds of guided meditation, and it's all about service work. And every once in a while, He'll say, by the way, you don't need to worry about that. I say, okay. I was trying not that worried. But now I won't. Because when I go help another alcoholic and addict, it flips it over into faith. And so this whole thing is about how can I best serve Thee. That's what the book tells me. So we want to best carry this message. Step 12, this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. Did you know not even God can help alcoholics and addicts very good without the help of another alcoholic. I don't know what it is about us, but we're just blocked off from us, so much of God, unless, I don't know. I don't know why, but for some reason, we can open our heart to God if we can first open our heart to another alcoholic who can say, it's working for me. And because of that, God needs us really bad. I think maybe that's how come when I said, God, I need you really bad to manage my life, He says, oh, cool, okay, well, I tell you what, I need you real bad to go help alcoholics. Let's make a deal. And that seemed to have become the terms and conditions by which, you know, a guy told me one time, he said, Dave, we don't make deals with God. And I said, well, we all tried. God, get me out of this one. You know, we all did that. I said, for some reason, God didn't accept our deals. Didn't seem like. I said, this is a deal that these terms God offers you. He calls the terms. You can accept it or reject it. It's up to you. But that's what your third step decision is. God called the terms. Here they are. And He says, think well before taking this step. God's serious about this. And He wants you to be. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Did you know that you can do something on this planet that is desperately needed? Our prisons are bursting at the seams. They're always trying to figure out how to get more beds, more beds. And did you know that, 85-90% of the people in there, either directly or indirectly, related to drugs and alcohol? And no one can... Do you think the prison's going to help this, cure you of alcoholism? Mm-mm. The judges and lawyers don't do any good. The doctors and the psychiatrists don't do any good, though we've got a few today that think they can. You know, these addiction specialists, watch out for them. I've been trying to help people get out of that muck and mire. Oh, yeah, he'll write me any script. Oh, gosh. You can help drug addicts and alcoholics when all these professional people out here cannot do it. They get you in more trouble. It happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. You know, this alcoholism that followed me around all my life, and I've had to leave town more than once, and I've, in disgrace and try to go start somewhere else. I've had to close down my church and leave town in disgrace. I'm on my third marriage. It always found me. It always sniffed me out and found me. It was my curse that like a bloodhound on my trail. And it always found me. I started trying to get help from drugs and alcohol when I was 24 years old. Seriously trying. And I didn't find this program till I was nearly 50. And all that time, good Lord. And so, you know, all of that time now has qualified me to be uniquely useful to helping other alcoholics. You know, when I gave my life to God in this program and accepted the primary purpose, the first thing God did was took my curse and gave it back to me as my gift. And now I am uniquely gifted to help alcoholics. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. Your job now, remember he's your employer? Your job now is to be at the place where you can be of maximum service to God and the people about you in this program. Notice it's my job to place myself there. Well, if they really need... This is every time I get to... talking the 12th step in a topic, if I bring it up as a topic in a meeting, and because I'm real proactive about service work, you know, and surely enough, somebody will always say, I thought this was a program of attraction, not promotion. I say, well, apparently you're confusing the 11th tradition with the 12th step. At the level of press, radio, and film, this is a program of attraction, not promotion. At the 12th step, we carry this message too. We have been given a great sense of purpose. That's our primary purpose. The big book says we have been given a great sense of purpose accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. My ongoing growing experience with the power of God working in my life is in direct contact with my attendance to that primary purpose. God said He would do this, manage my life and orchestrate it remarkably well, provided bringing all His power to bear upon my life to provide whatever I need, to remove all my difficulties so that victory over them can bear witness to those I'm going to get up and go help. God will do this if you will do this. Being wrecked in the same vessel, the big book says, all of us have shipwrecked in alcohol, the ship of alcoholism, you know. It was not the good ship lollipop. Started out that way. But being wrecked in the same vessel, being restored at last, restored and united under one God, with hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others. It's not about me. With our hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others, the things that matter so much to some people no longer signify much to us. How could they? Isn't that cool? There's something, and when you have it, nothing else matters. I like that. Because when we are restored and united under one God with hearts and minds attuned to our primary purpose, all this stuff that matters to the rest of the world, you know, doesn't matter to us so much. Thank you. Follow the dictates. It says, both you and the new man must walk together in the path of spiritual recovery. If you persist, remarkable things will follow. What will happen? When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put our life in God's hands was better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. I like that. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us. Did you know that as long as I am attending to what my assignment is, the will of God comes to me. I don't have to go get it. I don't have to try to figure out how to make it happen. Maybe if I'm standing on this corner that she passes by every day. Worry about your primary purpose and you won't have to worry about that. It might help you keep your mind off of it for a while. Follow the dictates of... You know, when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put our life in God's hands by the terms and conditions and played ball by the rules, that follow the dictates of a higher power, you will presently live in a new and wonderful world. No matter what your present circumstances, I've had people say, Dave, you didn't have it as bad as I did. I say, what has that got to do with it? Read this. No matter what your present circumstances, God leveled the playing field right there. It don't matter what your circumstances are, whether it's worse than mine or not as bad as mine. None of that matters anymore. God will take every one of us from wherever we're starting and rocket us all to the same place. No matter what your starting place is, you will presently... What does presently mean? Well, you see, there's sooner or later. Presently is the sooner part, and eventually is the later part. So God will presently, sooner than later, you'll find yourself in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your beginning place was. So follow the dictates of your higher power. Now, who dictated the terms? Say God. My wife's a school teacher. I pick up some habits from her. So, follow the dictates of a higher power. God dictated the terms. The terms are, I will provide all that you need if you will what? Keep close to Him and perform His work well. Follow the dictates of your higher power
and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what it looks like today. There's a verse in the book of Isaiah that says, He will make your desert to blossom like a rose. That sounds about like the same thing here. You presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances is. Quit looking at your problem. Look at your assignment, your primary purpose. And welcome to Zippity-Doo-Dah Land.